Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Enrico Belmonte.
Hey, Enrico. Thanks for, holding on and getting back in touch. I was out of recording for the whole summer, but missed talking to you. So I'm glad we got connected again, and we'll catch up a little bit offline. But you had an interesting topic just as we're starting up here, on using data. I'm not sure which is which. Or I always wonder what plural is. I think it's datum. Is that it? I don't know.
I don't know. You are a native speaker. I'm not.
I'm not. I grew up here. I can't speak English. yet the idea is that you mentioned it just briefly, and I thought, there's a lot to that. We might have to do more than one session on this. But what did you have in mind when we suggested that?
First of all, Fred, it's my pleasure to get in touch with you to record this session. I was thinking about the role of data. I think that the engineers, the modern engineers, they should have good basics about reliability, so the classical one, but they should also be equipped with some knowledge about data analysis. Especially in terms of mission profile, I think, which is, to my opinion, quite a hot topic in the modern industry.
Right. Well, you're talking about different than being a statistician. The data analysis has kind of taken on a variant of being a statistician that deals with numbers and data. But when you say using data and mission provision, I'm thinking, temperature profiles, thermal cycling, how often is an item used or not used? How often is it idle? How often is it maintained? Transportation, vibration, all of those things we have ways to measure and collect data. And it's not necessarily time to failure data that us reliability engineers / statisticians tend to focus on.
So if you recall the picture where you have the stress-strength interference method, where you have the stress distribution and strength distribution, I would say that for the strength distribution, there are a lot of well-established approach, whereas for stress distribution, it's a little bit, I wouldn't say more complicated, but generally, like 10 years ago, there were no chances, no opportunities to investigate it properly. So therefore, people relied basically on assumption. Instead, right now, there are a lot of data all around, and in order to analyze them, you should have some competencies in statistics, in terms of analysis of univariate distribution, multivariate distribution, clustering, machine learning, all a bunch of new competencies that they are more than, let's say, welcomed in the modern industry. So a reliability engineer is also requested to learn a lot about data analysis in order to be efficient and to leverage on the data that are available right now. What do you think about that?
No, I totally agree. And it's a big part of stress strength is a classic example of where in order to design something that has the robustness for the expected stresses it's going to see, you need to know what those stresses are. And not just, oh, it's going to see 40 C as a maximum temperature. Well, geez, I think in your neighborhood last year, you got above 40 C. I think it was the summer you talked about. So hopefully your phone worked just fine. But the idea is that the standards and the tables, the old style of here's the min max of this, that, and the other thing just doesn't cut it anymore. It's not reflecting reality. And I think coupled with that over the last 20, 30 years is our ability to measure stuff and sensor technology has gotten much easier to use, much less expensive to use, less intrusive, all that kind of stuff. Now, one other thing is, if you don't have good mission profile type data or the types of stresses you're going at, you have to be pretty creative sometimes. I worked with a game controller a team, and they were designing something. And one of the questions we asked was, they wanted to test the buttons. They were dome switches, essentially. And so you deform this dome of metal, and it would make contact, and then it would spring back. And they said, well, how do you do this in the past? This is the first project you did with had buttons on it. And they said, oh, we put them on a pneumatic plunger, and we push it a million times. I'm like, why a million? That sounds odd. And he says, well, that's what the data sheet says it can do.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second. How often do people actually push buttons on these things? And they had no idea.
Yeah, this is a new question, you know, because in the past, as you said, people tried to confused data sheet with requirements, which is mm-hmm. typical mistakes engineers are doing. But generally, engineers are conservative guys, you know. They yeah. are trying to collect worst case assumptions, you know.
Right.
And that's probably was possible some years ago, but due to the cost pressure that we experience in a modern company, that's not it's not feasible anymore, you know. And but think about temperature and humidity, no? Temperature yeah. and humidity. Temperature is a well, let's say, measured quantity, but yeah. humidity, nobody knows about it. Yeah. So therefore,
not really. Just to explain that a little bit, is humidity is it's called relative humidity because you have to know what the temperature is. And yeah. you know, 85 relative humidity is pretty meaningless of moisture content as opposed to what the temperature is. So if it's 45 C, then it's really hot and muggy. It makes it feel very, very hot. Yet if it's minus 10 C, 85 RH means it might be snowing. That's about it. It's pretty, it doesn't feel humid. So
yeah, I think
a lot of people misunderand that it's not an absolute in and of itself.
I think there are two aspects here. So I definitely agree with you that when considering, say, aging mechanism, it should always combine temperature and humidity. For example, electronics is much more sensitive to the combination of temperature and humidity than just to temperature.
Yep.
And in that case, as I said, engineers take a conservative assumption, so they consider pretty good all the temperature distribution, and then say, okay, let's take the highest relativity yeah. the product can encounter. So
I've seen it as a shortcut. Before, we had reasonable ways to measure all this stuff, and temperature, we yeah. had weather stations for centuries that we, if we chose to, we could go get that information and get a distribution out of it. Yet even then, we didn't do it. Nowadays, with our tools and equipment we have available, there's no reason not to. Yet I still see a lot of reluctance. And just, for example, that button pushing thing is, the problem was that a million was not enough for some of the buttons, and it was orders of magnitude too much for others, and it took time to push every one of them for a million times. So I ran into somebody that had a device that could intercept the blue Bluetooth signal. They called it a sniffer. It would gather the data that was being sent from the controller to the computer, to the games console. And I just stuck it in a big spreadsheet, and I looked for the signal that said push button A, and then tallied it up. And so I wrote some scripts that just pulled out the information I needed from all this coding that went back and forth. And it was, we did it about 30 times with different people that were in for gameplay trials on new systems and new software and stuff like that. And it just happened to piggyback on that study to gather the data I was looking for. And it took a couple of days. That was it. And I a couple hours with the spreadsheet, and I had all kinds of not the best of distributions. I only had 30 samples, but I knew pretty much what this the mean and standard deviation was. Distributions were for how often these particular buttons were, and then we had data about what kind of style of game player they were, whether they were.
Yeah.
And it made a difference, but it was that when I went to the engineering team with this data, they said, well, we never knew it was done like that. And it was all anecdotal prior to it. And I said, yeah, you just have to be a little creative to gather this data, and then you can make way better decisions. And the second point is that for some things, they just did what you were describing. They go to the max, or they go to a high margin, or the high end of what they think the stress would be applied. Oh, it'll never get above 10 foot-pounds, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's open this book about how hard somebody can pinch something, grab something in their fists. And there's tables, all this human factor stuff. And they had the average value, and it had distribution type data in some of them. And it went up to 25 foot-pounds, or what, I don't remember the actual numbers, but people could grab something incredibly higher pressure than what the engineers even thought was possible.
Yeah.
So it surprised them. But then it's like, do we want to design something that can withstand this one person in the world that can do this? Are we going to go like the 90th percentile? Or who actually uses our products, you know, and let's measure their capability. And it's always fascinating. Let's see what people really do and measure it and use that information to design to.
Yeah, I think you touch a good point. So I would add some reflections. The first one is that, as you said, we need to investigate how the product are used. So the use case analysis is one crucial aspect of design for reliability. And I think people should always do that carefully, separating between the intended use, the extreme use, and the misuse. Of course, as you said, we cannot design just as people apply extreme uses every time. You know, this cannot be the target of the design. However, extreme uses can happen, and they should be covered separately, I think.
And if it does fail, then fail safe. That was a big push for us with this gripping thing we were doing, is if somebody crushes this polymer, does it break sharp? You know, will it cut them if it breaks? And so we did go to the extremes and find out where it broke and how it broke for the extreme cases, yet we didn't design it to withstand that much pressure.
Yeah. But you have investigated how it behaves when in case of extreme uses. Mm-hmm. Definitely, they should be taken into account. Yeah? Yeah, it cannot be neglected.
Yeah.
Second point that you mentioned is about a normal use. And I think is we started talking about data. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a lot of new approaches. Let's say they are not pretty new, but they are new in the terms of application to reliability. For example, clustering or multivariate data analysis, they can help us identify what is the median usage. Yeah, and median usage cannot just be described in terms of number of cycles, but could also be related to temperature, could be related to the duration. So there are multiple parameters that should be included in order to describe the median usage. And therefore, what I'm saying, hey, let's analyze the data and let's have the competencies to analyze them properly. So we can start with univariate analysis, looking at number of cycles, for example. But even in that case, even if you have the number of cycles per month, for example, you have a distribution, how do you scale it up to 10 years, 15 years, 20 years usage? This is also a question that is important to address, and statisticians can do that definitely, but reliability engineers, say, in their toolbox like 5-10 years ago, there were not these questions, you know, and these are new questions to be addressed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, a new frontier for reliability engineers, get good data in terms of acquisition, but in terms of usage also. And I think there are a lot of things to do in this field.
Well, it's, well, there is, and I have no doubt about it. You're talking to the choir here, is because it's the, I thoroughly enjoy, and that's why I've gone out of my way in so many different programs, like go find the data, go create it if we don't have it, or go measure it. Yet I kind of grew up in industry in a world that's just what we did. If we don't have, like, I had a CEO or a general manager that if we were making a proposal or talking about what we're working on, he goes, show me the data. He was always interested in, where did you get this data? How did it accumulate? What kind of measurement error did it have? He was a stickler for, you talk with data. It was early in my career, and it's always been very useful for me in my overall career. But you're right. There's so many other tools out there and ways to look at stuff. And it's amazing what you see is when you put four or five, it's hard to see it in one plot or one screen, but three variables, and you put them in a cube, essentially, and you can rotate it on your screen. You can see patterns and associations and stuff that no single variate type data will ever give you. You may think these are related, but how are they related? And what kind of patterns do they create and so on? It is super informative. And I know using our software, I've done it with higher dimensions, where you get a three-dimensional slice of, say, 5 variables or 10 variables, and you can switch in one variable after another. And then you're going through, stepping through, looking at these things in different combinations, and all of a sudden, it becomes a crystal. It, instead of a cloud of points, it becomes super styrated and stacked and orderly, and like, well, what's causing that? So in that particular case that surprised me was the measurement of one of the variables that reacted, was interfering or something with a couple of other measurements, but it wasn't a fine enough measurement scale. So it got binned into like 5 readings. It was 2, 2.2, 2.4, and so on. And it needed a much finer resolution in order to see what was really going on. So we're back to the lab on that one. But there's so many different ways to do this stuff. And just a little curiosity and a handful of tools, you can be pretty dangerous. If you really understand the analysis techniques that are out there, you can be really effective.
Yeah. And, you know, I want also to mention the tools that are available. You just mentioned that. So, you know, there are tools like Databricks, Snowflakes, all the Python, let's say, mm-hmm. add-ons, all these kind of tools that like 5 years ago were just emerging. You know, now they are, let's say, they are tools that are commonly used by engineers. So they are needed to analyze data, you know, also artificial intelligence, algorithms, and so on. They should be part of the toolbox of reliability engineers. Therefore, I say, I started this discussion with you saying that data should be, let's say, considered, even if the ground, the fundamental, let's say, theory of design for reliability should be there, should not be replaced by data. You know, one of the points that we always talk about is understand damage mechanism, understand what are the leverages for doing good design. And these are, let's say, the key skills for reliability engineers. But if the reliability engineers get supported by data, they are much more effective than in the past.
Well, I'm thinking of tools like derating and stress strength calculations are just so much improved when we have good data behind them and good understanding of the distributions and the details of it. Yet also material selection. If we're looking at, you know, different polymer systems, and we need to know what temperature environment it's going to see. You know, when does it soften? What's the softening point for this particular polymer? And what are our options? And what's the kind of distribution of stresses that that polymer is going to see? Instead of just, oh, it's, we're going to put it in a home, it'll never see anything above 40 C or whatever, and we pick it off a data sheet. I think by asking the next set of questions and saying, well, here's the range of temperatures we're going to see, and here's how frequently they're going to occur, we can pick, we can optimize the choice of materials.
Yeah.
Much, and it's a, to me, that's a design for a reliability thing, yet procurement and material scientists and engineers are the ones that should be doing that and enabling them with much richer information, much richer data. It just enables them to make better decisions. I think
yeah,
the data sets just have to be trusted and useful.
And that is one of the challenges, you know, to have good data and then to process them.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah. I would say there are a lot of reliability approaches that can be just applied, but they can deliver really bad results if the data are not good enough. So
that's right.
Yeah. So the source of information should be trusted, and data is to analyze them, to check their plausibility. You know, that's really a key challenge for modern reliability engineers.
You know, one question, and might be hopefully one of our listeners knows the answer to this one, is that, you know, when cell phones first became these smartphones type stuff with like screen and touch screen and all that good stuff on it, you only had to drop it once or twice before it shattered all kinds of places. Now they got all kinds of cool new technology that it survives that. Yet, can you imagine being the person on that team saying, well, how many times would somebody drop this? And it's equivalent of today being $1,000 investment. And they were very rare. And it was the new hot thing or whatever. And I remember people treated them like with just so carefully because it was so expensive and such a neat new thing. And they didn't want to scratch it. It's like getting a brand new car. You don't want to take it on the road, any gravel roads, because it'll get
kind
of thing. Yeah, after the car gets a couple hundred miles on it, or the phone has been in your hand for 2-3 years, it falls off the table and it's fine. And then, you know, you accidentally drop it or this. Or it's the usage pattern. What I'm getting at is the usage pattern is not fixed.
It's not fixed, yeah.
Yeah, it's not open and close this cabinet door 10 times a day, every day, all the time. No, it will change with time and with the behaviors of your people that are using your products. I'm thinking washing machines, you know, all of a sudden the house gets bought and sold and it used to be a single person. Now it's a family of six. That machine's going to get used a whole lot more.
Yeah. And that creates a lot of challenges when it comes to forecast distribution.
Yeah.
You know, you have, for example, a couple of years of data, but you need to forecast 20 years distribution. How can you do that without knowing what is, let's say, the life of the people and how the pattern can change? Yeah, you need to take some confidence, yeah. But it's quite challenging and also really fascinating, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it open to our listeners. Is, you know, how do you, you know, one, I'm just curious if any interesting or creative things that you've had to go measure and learn from. I think success stories of, you know, just get the data and see what you got, kind of thing. And then how do you and your organization use data to improve the reliability designs of your products and so on? It kind of, we often ask for questions, and there's plenty of questions you may have if you're listening to this, and we'd be more than happy to entertain those and get you answers if we can, or talk about it here on the show. But if you got success stories, that might be pretty cool. We'd like to hear some of those. You can do that. You can even leave us a voice message that we could play as part of a show over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a button there for SpeakPipe that lets you record a message to us, or you could leave a written message. And Enrico and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So you don't have to show us your data. And I know a lot of us have proprietary stuff, but if you know of a great resource or a good story, we'd love to hear it. Oh, good topic, Enrico. I'm glad you brought it up. So Do you spend the day with your spreadsheet today? Is that why this came?
Yeah, we had a workshop on data, so therefore I talked.
Okay, good, there you go.
Yeah, it was a good topic for today. Yeah. Thank you very much, Fred.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.